Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we began our conversation with David Gibson. He is the director of the Center on Religion and Culture at Fordham University, and he has written an article for the website religionandpolitics.org, and it's entitled The Coming Religious Recession. We'd like to continue that conversation, and before we do, let me tell you a little bit more about David. Besides his standing at Fordham, he had a long career as an award-winning religious journalist, author, and filmmaker. He also worked for the Vatican Radio in Rome in the late 1980s. He returned to the United States in 1990 and worked for newspapers throughout the New York area, and has written for a variety of magazines and periodicals. Gibson is the author of two books on Catholicism, The Coming Catholic Church, How the Faithful Are Shaping a New American Catholicism, and The Rule of Benedict, Pope Benedict XVI and His Battle with the Modern World. He co-wrote and co-produced several documentaries on Christianity for CNN and the History Channel, and co-authored a book on biblical archaeology, Finding Jesus, Faith, Fact, Forgery. And that is the basis of a popular CNN series of the same name. So we welcome once again to Common Threads, David Gibson. Hi, David.
Hi, Fred. Great to be here again.
Yes. Good to have you back. Last week, I remember we ended our conversation with talking about how people tend to be drawn to spirituality and religion in the midst of or immediately after something very seriously tragic. We were talking about 9/11 and how that really encouraged people to reach out and reach up. But we also agreed that that can be short-lived, that often that doesn't take root. I once heard from a Hindu mystic that if you don't invite God into your summer home, he may not visit you in the winter. Meaning that those people who already have an established spiritual life, a solid understanding of the transcendent in their daily lives and how they conduct themselves, how they think about the world, might be better grounded when tragedy happens. They will already have this knowledge, if you will, that God is present here, as opposed to the person who kind of forgets about God, really doesn't pay much attention, and then all of a sudden tragedy strikes, and boom, that's when the first call. Hey, anybody up there? do you have any comment on that? Do you know if there's any research that has been done, scientific or simply social, that confirms that idea?
Well, I think we can see it out there. I think most, you know, social research would confirm that, but also just anecdotally, as we can see, we were talking about 9/11 before, but we're talking about the pandemic and the kind of and the sense of disorientation, the sense of being unsettled, of loss, of no explanation, of anger, also. That we see, which is so self-defeating, Fred, isn't it? I mean, when you see the anger of, you know, the people who are upset as all of this going on, which is so understandable, but then we often react, we lash out, we blame, or we do things that are, you know, self-defeating, like not wearing masks and that sort of thing. So, but these are, again, I think that I love that bit of wisdom, and it really is so true. We have a generation of spiritual seekers. That's been a truism for 20 years at least, 25 years. The nuns, N-O-N-E-S, the none of the above, not the nuns, the N-U-N-S. That's another story and another crisis. But the people with no affiliation are growing. There are more nuns, people who are unaffiliated with religion, than there are Catholics. Or even white evangelicals, or some of the major churches and denominations in our country. These are folks who, you know, who are not godless, who are not irreligious, who are seeking, but they don't have, as you say, those kind of deeper roots and practices, really, life practices that help you cope when the tragedy strikes. Obviously, from my Christian perspective, we believe that when tragedy strikes, God will not abandon you. He'll be there. The churches should be there. Pastors should be there, and they will be. But, you know, how can you help other people if you're unmoored and disoriented, if you don't have either a philosophy or a guiding faith life or some kind of practice that really grounds you and prepares you for these things? There's been a fascinating growth, another story we talk about sometime, but a growth in the interest in Stoicism, the ancient Greek philosophy of Stoicism, which is, you know, kind of an effort to cope with the uncertainty of life. People have to have something, and for too many people, there's nothing, and hence you see the evidence out there in the sense of dislocation and disorientation and the bad social phenomenon, I think, that grows out of that.
You know, it's interesting because I've come across a number of different people of different spiritual persuasions, and I tend to see those people whom, as you say, they have a spiritual practice. They are truly grounded in something. And when tragedy strikes, such as in this current pandemic or 9/11, you name it, they get themselves through it, not just through their faith, but through their practice, through mm-hmm. what they have done, whether it's meditation, whether it's devotional scripture reading, whatever it is, mass, church, whatever. But then I also run into those people who seem to have lived charmed lives and have considered themselves devout or religious. But when tragedy strikes, they question very strongly their faith, and they say, how could God let this happen? And when I hear that, and it's usually something that affects them very personally, like the loss of a family member, something like that. When I hear that, I'm thinking, what, you never heard of the Holocaust? Mm-hmm. You never heard of slavery? Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. Millions of people have suffered greatly, and you've been untouched, and now you crank about it.
Yeah, it's a real, you know, it's almost a manifestation of the great American heresy, the gospel of health and wealth, the kind of prosperity gospel that's preached out there. And, you know, there are specific prosperity gospel preachers, but there's also, I think, a kind of, you know, middle-class suburban comfort, you know, idea that, you know, our lives are pretty good, and, you know, so we must be blessed, and this is why we go to church. It's like, no, you actually go to church because no one gets out alive. you go to church because, you know, life is not without suffering, and we need to find some meaning in that. Obviously, if you're coming from the Christian tradition like I am, you find a particular meaning in that, and redemption through it, hopefully. But again, what you said before is exactly my reaction. It's also, if you're surprised by the pandemic or by 9/11, my first thought is,
you don't get out much.
What the rest of the world goes through all the time. We are so isolated. But, and again, it's not just the rest of the world, but your own neighbors, you know, in not just the Holocaust in 1940, but, you know, today, Ebola in Africa, pandemics in other parts of the world. The pandemic is, as bad as it is here and as bad as our response has been, is going to be worse in other countries in the world that don't have any healthcare infrastructure. Terrorism, wars, all this devastation goes on in other parts of the country day in and day out. There's also devastation in our own neighborhood. The pain that, again, connecting this, as many have done, the pandemic and with the virus of racism that we see in our world. Whatever one thinks about all protests that are going on, it is exposed, and for so many people, and I think it's really taken root, the fact that there is another America. So I guess, you know, if you're not just going through the motions of your religious life, but are it's awakening you to the suffering that goes on and the duty you have, you shouldn't be ambushed when tragedy strikes. It's not good. It's no, you know, it's no fun, but at least, as you say, we should be prepared.
Outside of conservative evangelicals, do we, and I'm using the big we here, as Americans in general, still believe in a divinely inspired concept of American exceptionalism?
I think we do, to a degree, but, you know, defining it, it's become tainted. I mean, how do you define it? You know, there are some who define it as America is a Christian nation, quote unquote, and it was almost this kind of civil religion, I call it on steroids, that, you know, God was guiding the hands of the founders. And I mean, you and I know, if you know anything about history, the founders were largely Christian, but of a type of kind of deistic Christianity that most, you know, Americans might not recognize or appreciate today. Either way, there's this idea that, again, this is a divinely inspired nation, that the exceptionalism is that we can do no wrong. And that would be truly exceptional. The other sort of exceptionalism, which I would prefer to subscribe to, is that we are truly more like, you know, the Israel of the Hebrew Bible, in the sense that, you know, we are a nation who believes in the kind of divine inspiration, that we are blessed, but only in that we're trying to form a more perfect union. We are only blessed in the sense that we realize how imperfect we are. And you can't but look at American history and realize how many great imperfections we've had, and look at Lincoln's second inaugural address. We are stumbling every year, every day, every week towards a more perfect union, as long as we realize that that is what would make us exceptional, to my mind, as the Hebrews, as the Israelites of old, who were always falling away from their covenantal promises, and then, through the prophets reminding them, had to find their way back. And that's what we need to do, I think, is find our way back by moving forward.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is David Gibson. He's the director of the Center on Religion and Culture at Fordham University. And we're talking about his article that you can find on religionandpolitics.org on the coming religious recession. You mentioned the federal bailouts that many businesses have received, and that some of that money has gone to churches and other houses of worship. Has there been any protest that you're aware of from those who would oppose what they would consider the funding of religion?
It's funny you should bring that up. It's there were some small protests, but nobody knew until just recently, very recently, who's getting the money. And because the Trump administration had refused to say what corporations were getting it. You know, there are obviously terrible problems with the administration of this, these funds, that small businesses who should have been getting them are not, and large corporations who shouldn't have been getting money. But nobody knew what religious groups were getting them. And those numbers have just recently come out. And there are some, you know, numbers out there, some basically the rich get richer, the big mega churches have gotten, you know, some significant funding. But I think what it's really revealed, for one, is what a mom and pop shop operation American religion is. You know, most, the vast majority, over 90% of American congregations are small neighborhood outfits. They really are small businesses. And so they're getting loans. If they get anything, it's in the, you know, $150,000 range, which is very small, and it's for their payrolls. This isn't to promote religion. It's to keep people on their payrolls, keep people working, keep people spending the money. So I think there has not been a real backlash yet. And also there's so many other problems in the sense of who else got money, who shouldn't have. But I don't think there's really that much of a backlash against houses of worship getting them. And, you know, I think I'd be grateful for that. But we do have to, this is the journalist in me talking, we do have to, I think, scrutinize these numbers. We want transparency and accountability. Because do you want some of these huge, you know, prosperity gospel multi-million-dollar ministries getting a bailout from the federal government when they're, you know, virtually money-making operations?
Do we know how much? Do we know how much Paula White got?
Yes, and I forget the exact number, but her ministry, and again, she's, you know, on part of the administration, part of the president's evangelical advisors group, and her ministry down in Orlando got a significant chunk of money. I can't recall the number right now, but those things are, that's the problematic thing. You know, the you know, parishes and congregations here and there getting small, relatively small amounts of money is not the problem. I think that's not what is going to outrage people.
Yeah, and I, please don't think I'm trying to be hard on Paula White. As a matter of fact, I find out she's down to her last three private jets, so I'm sure she needs the money. One of the things you write, and this kind of surprised me, in your article, so when my own Catholic diocese shuttered its churches to avoid spreading the coronavirus, a friend of mine quipped that our fellow believers will never go back once they see how nice it is to sleep in on Sunday mornings. And you give a little credence to that, like this might prove to be the case, but as Catholics, you are called to assemble for the Eucharist on Sundays. That's not a negotiating point, right? I mean, how can that happen?
That's very true. Yeah. Well, it's very true, but Catholics are pretty much like everyone else in America. In the level of church going, it used to be a lot higher, especially when it was seen as a very, you know, duty-based religion, which it is for many, you know, still too often. But, you know, Catholics, you know, have rightly, I think, should see it as more of not just an obligation or a duty that you have to fulfill, otherwise you're going to hell, but something that you want to do and that is, you know, part of your witness as a Catholic and your life as a Catholic. On the other hand, that's the ideal. The reality is Catholics are much like everyone else in the levels of church going, but also fundamentally, and the friend I quoted there enjoyed that I put her name in there, and I imagine she'll still keep going. But a lot of people, church going is a habit like anything else. You know, we are a mass of habits. I think it was William James said that. And when he's talking about religion and spirituality, and people can lose. We've already seen that. You know, other things come up. You know, brunch on Sundays. Let's do that instead of going to church. Soccer, your kids' sports, all these kinds of things have supplanted the day of rest, church going, a day of reflection. So church going is a habit. This is coming into months now. It could be a year, really, before we're allowed in significant numbers to go back to church. You look at the studies. I quote Ryan Burge, who's a great sociologist at East Illinois University, State University, that the folks over time who you lose, the folks who you lose over time are that kind of middle band of churchgoers who come every couple of weeks or once a month. They come, but those are also the ones who you're going to lose who may not come back.
Interesting. You refer to The Scourging Angel. It's a book that chronicles the Black Death, which, as you say, is credited with disrupting more than one social system. The author says that it didn't do anything other than accelerate what was already underway. What did he mean by that, and how can we use this to reflect on the current pandemic?
Well, I'm a historian by training, which I think any good journalist should be. because we have to know, you know, it's always important to know that almost everything has happened before. But, you know, analogies to history, which we're doing all the time these days, can also have their weaknesses. And one of them is to the Black Plague, which in popular history is credited with doing so many things, ending the feudalist system. So many people, so many serfs were killed by the Black Death that when it passed, there was a labor shortage, and people started paying just wages to hire people. So it's, you know, it's credited with ending the system of feudalism, with prompting the Reformation. People began to ask themselves, you know, didn't trust the church. There were so many priests who were killed that the clergy they hired, that they started ordaining to replace them, were of such low quality that people said, the heck with the church. They started a more privatized type of faith. I mean, these are all various theories. There's something to them. But the point that Ben Gummer was making, which I think is very true, is that really the Black Plague didn't invent anything, didn't change history. It accelerated it. These trends were already in place. And the Black Death of the 14th century simply accelerated what was already happening. And I think that is an analogy we could make to today in terms of church going and what I call this coming religion recession. If people were indifferent or kind of on the fence about going to church on Sunday before, they'll probably not come back. And I think there are a lot of things in, and again, you know, let's say again in my own Catholic church, but this goes through the mainline denominations and everywhere. We were facing a lot of issues, school closings, you know, financial shortfalls, a lot of issues. This is already accelerating that contraction of our religious infrastructure. Small churches are closing, especially those in the Latino and minority communities that are poorer, but where church going is a more critical part of that community. Catholic schools are closing. Dioceses are cutting back. Other denominations are cutting back in their social services. That critical witness, which keeps the religious footprint so prominent in the American social fabric. So, you know, it's a real challenge, and I think that, again, this pandemic, like in previous ones, may only put the future on fast forward.
That's that's a lot to contemplate, but really, I appreciate the context in which you put it. And I was not aware of people giving that much credit to the bubonic plague for the social disruption, but that is interesting to know that it
really is. Yeah, after you read my article, go read Barbara Tuchman's A Distant Mirror about the calamitous 14th century. It's an excellent book of popular history, and that'll take you through it.
A Distant Mirror. I'll remember that. Thank you. We are out of time for this edition of Common Threads, David, but once again, thank you so very much, not only for today, but last week as well.
Thank you. Good to be with you, Fred.
You're listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella. Today, my guest was David Gibson, the director of the Center on Religion and Culture at Fordham University, and we've been discussing his article, which you can find on religionandpolitics.org. The coming religious recession. Please join us next week on Common Threads. And once more, let me mention that Common Threads is now a podcast. You can find it at your favorite podcast platform, iTunes, Google, Simplecast, wherever they have fine quality podcasts. And Common Threads is actually a rather common name for multiple podcasts. So you want to look for Common Threads and Interfaith Dialogue. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next week.